I'd like to welcome back Isotune Sport as a sponsor of the show for 2023. After over a decade in competitive shooting, I thought I had it all figured out, but I didn't know I was actually missing out on Bluetooth hearing protection. The first time you're on the range and you zero a rifle while listening to a little Chris Stapleton or some Poison, your life will never be the same. I pretty much live with my Isotune Sport calibers in my ears now. Along with going to the range, I wear them to the gym, the grocery store, walking around the neighborhood, everywhere. And I'm never in condition white because the active hearing still works, whether I'm listening to a podcast, a book, or even music. So if I need to hear something, the calibers amplify the sound to my comfort level. And if there's gunfire, like say on the range, it will cut the amplification to protect my hearing. All the benefits of active hearing protection with the modern functionality of Bluetooth to listen to music, podcasts, or even take phone calls. Get yourself some Isotune Sport Ear Pro today and join the Bluetooth revolution.
A little mistake can drastically change the scores, but I think he went way too far in that direction. It wasn't careful enough. Like, a lot of people make these little mistakes that don't matter at all in terms of real safety. And at this match, I think there was a great culture as far as like not going after, not gotcha, anyone for DQs. Like,
to me, those are rules are written by pistol shooters who are afraid of long guns and don't want to bother to learn.
So this seemed like a last minute, kind of feeble attempt at doing that anyway, without having thought of it that much beforehand. So
there's no other match you can go to in the country where it would be okay to point a gun at someone. That's not the culture.
Like, I'm super psyched for Modified. I think it's a huge success.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Prep and Press. I'm your host, Dave Hartman. And as you can tell from the intro, we have a great show for you here today. As you may know, this year's USPSA Multigun Nationals was held at Forest Lake Sportsman's Club in Forest Lake, Minnesota. I was very fortunate to attend thanks to Isotune Sport, and I had a great time. Fun stages, challenging stages, super technical stages, weird shooting positions, and great staff. I actually made a bunch of videos on the USPSA Multigun Nationals. They're on the Prep and Press YouTube channel. You can check those out. But a few months ago, I had match director Adam Maxwell and assistant match director Kevin Harrington on the show to preview the match. And in today's episode, I have Max Leograndis on to do an analysis of the match. What went right? What went wrong? And what could be done in the future to make for an even better product for the shooting community. I'm really excited to have Max on the show again because I feel that he's in a unique position to see multiple aspects of the match environment from the perspective of many different stakeholders because, one, Max is a world-class competitor himself. He's also a match director. He started a new organization in the Practical Competition Shooting League, or PCSL. He's a high-level trainer, and most of all, he has a completely different way of observing and analyzing things than me. And you'll hear it in this episode. There's some times that we reach the same conclusion coming at it from completely different perspectives. There's other times that we disagree, but I always enjoy when I get to talk to Max, whether it's on the podcast or off the podcast. And I know that you're going to enjoy this interview as well. If you have any comments on the discussion, let's keep it going over at the Prep and Press YouTube channel, where you'll find the video version of this interview. Just leave your comments there. Keep them nice. Thanks for being here and enjoy the show. Max, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Dude, it's great to have you. So we find you in Minnesota, right? You just kind of stayed after Nationals and decided you're going to set up camp there.
Yeah, I'm hanging out for a few weeks. So Tampa Timmy actually stepped up to run a little PCSL two gun up here, just to like introduce the format to the area. It was 2 weeks after Multigun Nationals. So I wanted to help AMAX out. He's been supportive of my stuff coming out and participating. So I wanted to come staff Multigun Nationals. So I did that. And then I'm hanging out here a week after this weekend and doing a co PCC class with Josh Freilich. So, 4 weekends in a row up here. It's kind of nice to get out of the Phoenix heat because it's been brutal.
Yeah, I was going to say, judging by the weather map, it's a good time for you to head up to the north. So I've got
I've got a couple questions for you before we get started, but I want to real quick run over like where we're going to go with this show. So we're doing basically like a multi-gun nationals debrief. Both you and I were there. You did the staff thing and shot stages as well. I just went as a competitor, thanks to Isotune Sport. And so you have several formats, and so several topics here. So we're going to talk about like the format of the match, which is a big one. We're going to talk about staffing culture, which is typically in the past has been a big one, and a lot of people were wondering how this match would shake out with USPSA and three gun. And then we're going to talk about gear and divisions. And then finally, we're going to talk about something that's unique in this match, was that there was a World Shoot qualifier stage. So we'll talk about that as well. But first, I got to ask you, Max. So you've got a PCSL hat on. You know, I know you as the guy that started his own league and has grown it into something that's, you know, interesting on the national level. A lot of people really love the format. And it takes a lot of things from USPSA, from other formats, and melds them together. And so when I saw you at Multigun Nationals, someone said you're going to be there. And I'm like, I think they misspoke. But then I saw you. Oh, really? I'm like, what the heck are you doing? So I got to say, like, as someone who started a whole different entity aside from USPSA, it was kind of surprising to see you there. So maybe you could speak to that a little bit and kind of fill us into what your, I guess, thought process and methodology on different match formats are.
Well, I think two gun just hasn't been done right for a long, long time. And where I see it done right is like on a smaller scale at the local level. Like for example, at CGGR, they run a really successful two gun match out there in North Carolina. So I saw a void for this along with a lot of other people back in like 2020. And I was really excited when USPSA was going in that direction too with the PCC two gun matches. But in my opinion, they chose the wrong end of the 50-50, you know, choice for multiple things. Like they didn't allow rifle calibers. They made it PCC only. They didn't allow hit factor scoring. They made it time plus points. I think those are both mistakes, and the format that I've created with PCSL, in my opinion, is like the direction that we should be going, because it's a great balance of accessibility to everyone as far as the equipment required to perform well. Like you don't need a super Gucci'd out AR, you know, with like 18-inch rifle gas and 77 grain bullets and everything. Like you can literally just bring your duty gear and shoot practical division. You can bring your race gear and shoot competition division. Everyone's more or less on the same playing field, and it's a lot more accessible as far as like understanding the rules, the way the targets are designed and colored, and so it's really just a separate format. Like I don't intend to replace USPSA at all. I obviously still shoot USPSA all the time. I'm up here shooting USPSA matches in Minnesota. I've already shot like four in the last week because I didn't realize there were that many out here, but I'm having a ton of fun. Like the as far as building something from the ground up, I had a very unique opportunity to do it at the Cobalt Range in St. George, Utah. And I was just, in a position to make decisions that were the direction that I wanted to see shooting sports go in, versus having to go through a system like, the board of directors, rule changes, getting the membership interested in these topics, which is hard to do in the first place, you know? So, in short, I haven't been antagonistic to USPSA at all. Like I want to be supportive and see it, change in the right direction. But I understand that that's a much slower moving process. So I had an opportunity to do this and I just decided to. So in my opinion, it's just like, it's another option, just like IDPA has been for a long time.
Got it. Okay. Well, I'm glad you explained that, because, you know, for not having like ever asked you about that, there's a lot of like, sewing circle talk and locker room talk where people kind of make assumptions and everything. So I'm really glad you shared that. So that's good to know. And it was great to see you at the match. All right. So let's discuss the format of the match. So, three day match, USPSA multi-gun championship, for the future. This was in Forest Lake, Minnesota at the Forest Lake Sportsman's Club. 12 stages, 3 days. I guess that's kind of the overview. What are the thoughts you have on the format of the match?
So the thing that a lot of people have been critical about, and that personally, like I am the most critical of AMAX for deciding to do, is the basically stand and deliver like performance day on Sunday. So everyone shot the meat of the match, which was 8 stages, which like I want to give them credit, like they were fantastic, and all the stage designers. I'm not sure who designed what. But from what I could tell talking to competitors, from the videos I saw, the stage that I rode, the meat of the match was awesome. Like there wasn't any, you know, crazy carnival target. It was pretty well balanced, but very difficult shooting challenges that weren't out of anyone's reach. Just a really solid three-gun match. Was that your experience with them?
Yeah, so I thought they were technical matches worthy, or excuse me, stages worthy of a national match. That's what I saw. So a lot of times in three gun, there's not really a lot of options. It's pretty much like start here, end here, shoot everything in between. And it's really obvious what is shotgun versus pistol versus rifle. One of the things that the clubs in Minnesota have really tried to do in the past is give shooters options. And they tried to do that this time as well with like the full size USPSA metric targets were pistol, the miniature size metric targets were rifle, and then the IPSC Classic. Is that right? Am I saying that right? The turtle shape.
Was there IPSC Classic? Yeah, they keep changing the name over time. Now it's just called USPSA and IPSC target. It used to be called metric. The United States one used to be called metric, even though we don't use the metric system, and that was the torso. So like that
made and then the classic was called the classic.
The turtle.
That was called the classic, even though it was the second one to become, so it's not actually the classic. Yeah, it was very confusing. Okay, so just the IPSC target was the option, so you could choose to shoot rifle or pistol on that one. So I thought that was cool. I really liked all those stages. There was a lot of technical stuff. There was several instances of hoser. There was also stuff that made you like stop and pause to shoot. So I thought I had a good mix of all the things. So that was my take on it.
Yeah. And then, so everyone shot the first 8 stages on Friday and Saturday on an AMPM rotation. And so those were all done by the end of Saturday night. So like you have the long, difficult stages, out of the way. And then you go into Sunday. Everyone kind of sees how they stack up against each other. And you have 4 extremely fast stages left to shoot. For example, in open division, Scott Green had a fast stage time, or the fastest stage time on one of the shotgun only stages of 7:99. So when you're comparing that to stages that take between 40 and 60 seconds, with the multi-gun scoring system, how it's traditionally been done, which every stage is worth 100 points. In my personal opinion, I don't think there's any excuse to design a stage like that. I don't think it belongs in a multi-gun match. I think Adam's idea for, I actually back him up on the idea of making these 4 like really fast stand and deliver stages to kind of get some excitement and, have a different flavor for day 3, where like there's a lot of pressure and a little mistake can drastically change the scores. But I think he went way too far in that direction. It wasn't careful enough with how the stage times ended up playing out. And the solution to this, actually, like the stages could have been designed a little bit differently, obviously, but as a match director, like that was his decision to make them very simple stand and deliver stages. I think that in order to have that just balance out way better in a 3-gun match format like this, there needs to be significant change in how the scoring is limited by the rule book. So there are a few solutions for that, like directions that USPSA could go in. And I wanted to like go over those on the podcast to get people talking about them so that hopefully next year, like the multi-gun committee or whatever, like they can get together and decide on what makes sense going forward. But I think that that's like a number one thing to allow flexibility for a match record to design a match like this.
Yeah, flexibility is always good, especially for the match director to be creative and then the people designing stages. So AMAX and Kevin Harrington, who is the, I guess, assistant match director, they were on the podcast several months ago and giving like a preview of multi-gun nationals. And that was when stages were already approved and things of that nature. And so one of the things that AMAX had said was he wanted it to feel like a USPSA area match. And this is your realm, because I've never actually shot an area match, but it's typically what we saw at multi-gun nationals, where you have several long stages or field courses or whatever, and then a couple speed shoot stages thrown in. And in fact, there's actually like a speed shoot provision in the multi-gun scorebook, or not scorebook, mm-hmm. rulebook, for exactly what we saw in multi-gun nationals. But I don't think that's been utilized a lot in the past, especially in multi, or not especially in multi-gun, specifically in multi-gun.
So what does the speed shoot provision do? Does it score differently than?
Well, I got it up right here. If you'll allow me, I can read it so everybody's on the same page. So this is in the USPSA rifle shotgun multi-gun rule book. And it says courses of fire consisting of one continuous string of fire shot on one or more arrays of multiple targets from a single location or view. The written stage briefing may specify engaging arrays of targets without violating rule 1.1.5, as long as the other, or as long as the competitor is allowed to engage said arrays in any order and individual, blah, blah, blah. Let's see.
So that's just saying that you can dictate arrays and it doesn't have to be freestyle, right?
Yeah, and then there is a four multi-gun matches which would apply, and it says no more than 8 rounds per firearm type may be required. The transition from one firearm type to another will be used instead of mandatory reloads. Total rounds are limited by the number of firearm types required in the course of fire times 8, weak strong hand, blah, blah, blah. Multi-gun match prior to, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so that wasn't what we had.
So that wasn't what we had, but that was what was intended, right? So when the stages were published, there was a hullabaloo on social media about people complaining about there's only 9 targets on this stage, or 8 targets, or whatever it was. And so on the ground, as you know, like the stage descriptions obviously sometimes don't match what is on the ground. On the ground, they put more targets out there to make it a more difficult thing. But like you said, still was a stand and deliver stage.
Well, I think the more targets in this case even made it better, because if you'd had half the targets, you know, the times would have been a lot less. And yeah, in my opinion, the problem would have been even worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the reason they did it, right? Was to add more targets. But what I'm saying is that was the format they were following, was something that's traditional in an area match and then is actually in the rule book. So.
Yeah. And I've talked to Adam about it too. And he's like, he's very happy with the pressure and the swinginess in the scores, and forcing people to go through that pressure in order to perform, you know, fundamental shooting challenges on demand. So he doesn't want to change that aspect of it by any means, but definitely thinks that scoring should be looked at as far as possibly making it more fair or more balanced.
And so what kind of changes would make it more fair, more balanced?
Okay. So let's just look at the, at these four stages in isolation, but like the faster shotgun one in particular in open is like an outlier, because you have a 799 winning stage time. And a flying clay miss is 10 seconds. And the stage had, this was the one with the rabbit and the floater, I believe, on it, right? And then a bunch of KD pipes right in front of you. So if you miss one of the flying clay targets, you're at minus 10 seconds, which is like 60% of your stage is gone already, right? So you go from theoretically like 8 seconds to 18 seconds. And that's, you know, 60 match points down, which is 5% of your overall score. So like one missed target here on this stage could affect your placing in the match by 5%, which is, it's way too much. It's like the spirit of three gun, in my opinion, like this is what I've observed over time, especially watching like the best shooters in different disciplines, like, you know, the legendary pistol shooters like JJ Krause, Casey Eusebio, and the up and coming guys like Christian Seiler, and how the stage wins are executed in a USPSA pistol match versus someone like Daniel Horner, who's just like the most dominant three gunner ever in this format. Like when you analyze the sports from the winning shooters' perspectives, three gun that I've seen is about being fundamentally amazing with all three firearms, but not to the point where you are forced to execute extremely nuanced stage plans, removing tenths of seconds here and there based on footwork and like risky shots entering and exiting positions and all. It's just about being the most solid shooter possible for like a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes straight on a stage, which is incredibly hard. And like on both sides of the aisle, I don't think that USPSA or one gun shooters give three gunners enough respect as far as how hard it is to execute a stage while making that few mistakes like Daniel consistently does over and over. But at the same time, like if you were to put Daniel on a handgun against like JJ Rakaza, like both of them in carry optics, like Daniel would do great, but it's just not even a contest. Like as far as on technical USPSA or IPSC courses, how to shave off those nuances. Because in a three gun match, in my opinion, like the spirit of it is that you're allowed to make these little mistakes. It's just like you want to avoid the big ones. You need your guns to run flawlessly to avoid those long jams. You need to hit targets without makeup shots, especially on targets that are high value, like flying plays where you don't get a second chance, long range rifle targets where a makeup shot can actually cost seconds instead of milliseconds, right? And so when you take that out and you start testing skills on stages where the same mistake, this is the big one for me, really. It can be like summed up in this: the same mistake that can happen in any one of these stages, if it happens on one of these short ones that's unlucky for you timing wise versus on a long course, it's like 60 seconds, having a swing of like it affecting your overall match by fractions of a percent, like, you know, 0.1, 0.2% in your overall match finish, just because of the relative time that it takes, like, versus affecting your match by whole percents, like 1, 2, 3%, just on a shotgun jam where, you know, you took a second to clear it. It was a really quick, like, oh, stovepipe, just clear that shell, rack a new round in and go. That 1 second on a 10 second stage is 10%. And you only have 1200 points in the match. Like, but if you were to do that on a 60 second stage, that 1 second is less than, you know, less than 1% of the overall time. So
on the stage that you're talking about with the flying clay and the rabbit, I did have that shotgun malfunction you're talking about.
I didn't know that at all. That's funny.
Yeah, no, it's perfect to for the conversation here. So I guess, you know, I did a bunch of videos on that. They're on YouTube. I'll put a link in the show notes if you're listening to this on the podcast, or down below if you're watching on YouTube, and you can check those out yourself. But it looks much faster in video than it felt when it was happening. It felt like it was a damn eternity there. But then, just like you said, like you watched it and it was like, man, any other stage, I wouldn't have really been a big deal at all. So I had not, I mean, I understood like how bad that screwed me on that stage, but I had not thought of it in the context that you're talking about, where any other stage, that mistake wouldn't have been nearly as detrimental. So my thought is like, you know, I've been shooting three guns since 2011. And I've bitched about a lot of stages and I've bitched about a lot of matches and it never really changed anything. And so now I'm kind of the point of like, okay, well, this is what we're doing. And so I don't necessarily can think about that anymore. But the way you just explained it really put it in perspective and context for me. So that was a very good explanation of what the issue was. So
Did you miss a flying clay because of that, or was it
no? I shot both the clays.
Okay.
Yep, I shot both the clays, and then I knocked a bunch down. And then when I reloaded, it wouldn't put one on the lifter after that. And after, you know, several pulls of the trigger and racking it, it still didn't do it. And I finally had to break the gun down or off my shoulder and fix it. But
so it's kind of scary, right? Like shotgun mouths like that happen all the time. And I was ROing a stage in the main part of the match that had two flyers and a rabbit. Mm-hmm. And that stage was like maybe a 60-second stage for a lot of, like, even yeah. the best triggers, like close to 60 seconds. And if you get a jam on a flying clay, you know, that's like a guaranteed 10-second penalty.
Well, and there but were two clays there, so that could be right. 20.
Right. But even then, it's like if you're the best shooter in the world and getting those stage wins at 60 seconds and you had a 20-second penalty, you know, it's 25% of your stage.
Yep.
But if you have it on one target on this speed shoot, it's already 60% of your stage. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's triple the match points for the exact same malfunction that, like, technically can happen at any point. Like, obviously, we're all supposed to keep our gear running. That's part of the challenge. But when you have the ability for luck to play into it that much based yeah. on where it happens in the stage, in my opinion, as a match director, that's something that I'm aware of designing stages and think that it's the responsibility of match directors to understand that and make a conscious decision that, like, hey, I want to balance the match, like, in as good a way as I can, like, while still executing my vision. Like Adam's vision of, like, the pressure stages on day three, I think is very good and, like, can be done very well. Mm-hmm. It just needs to be a little bit more balanced.
So how then do you, so if that is like a format that wants to continue, and from one of Adam's stories or one of the emails that came out from Practice Corps, it looks like Multigun Nationals is pretty good chance of it being back at Forest Lake again. So understanding the same group of hooligans are going to put that match together, like, what mm-hmm. what can they do to improve that concept while still maintaining the spirit of that concept? Do you think there's stage design things, or do you think, like, we should talk about rule changes? What are you proposing, or what would you propose?
Yeah, there are a few different ways to address the issue, and really any of these could work. So I think obviously the easiest one is stage design. When you're limited by the 100 point per stage rule and the way that penalties are, like, for example, on the rifle pistol stages, on some of them you had, you know, five targets at 25 yards with the handgun, like, all in a row, and mini rifle targets at 25 yards, right? So one FTN there is 33% of your stage, right? Like, it brings you from 15 to 20. And of course, everyone's rushing and trying to get the best stage times, like, trying to keep their lead. So that's very punishing. Like, I think if you're limited by these scoring restrictions as a match director, like, you should try to guarantee that times, like, within this match, I think 25 is probably cutting it close, but, like, 30 seconds per shooter for the fastest shooters completing the stage is something you should target, like, specifically target. So, like, the Adam talked about why they didn't do a jungle run stage on some of the shotgun ones, which he mentioned it's a foot race and a loading race a lot of the time, and he didn't want it to be like that. He wanted it to be more stand and deliver. I think, like, foot race and loading race are two, like, opposite ideas, right? If you're loading, you're not running, sprinting as fast as you can. And the foot race in open, that's usually where it is, right? Because you don't have to reload that much. So if you just if you made a shorter jungle run that had wide transitions, where it's not about foot race, it's about accurately getting your gun on target fast, make sure that your pattern hits the pipe correctly so that it falls, and then you run into that stand, activate the clays, and then throw them. Like, you could have turned that 8-second stage for Scott into a 20-second stage. And it wouldn't really have come down to foot race, because you don't need that much distance to make it interesting. You just need a lot of wide transitions. It makes it very hard to go one for one on the steel, because it's not just all in a row here. You're swinging the gun around, you're moving, you're stepping on uneven ground. So that's one change that could have been done there, possibly for even both of them. I know there were some limitations in angles where you shoot, having both those stages in that area. And then on the rifle pistol hosers, which for those of you guys that didn't see them, it was one box and a U of targets. And it was just hose everything with rifle in one direction, dump it, hose everything with pistol in one direction. And it was just, yeah, how fast could you do it without getting an FTN, basically? So just make that you know, put two walls there, put a couple barrels to block positions, maybe even have a step activator on one side or like a rope that you pull or something that's super quick to reset. Have a swinger, like instead of making a bunch of 25-yard targets where FTNs are very likely if you're rushing, like make it a little bit more technical, force you to move, force you to transition a little more, and turn a 15-second stage into a 25-second stage that more of the middle of the pack and even the top guys, like it makes it more of a marksmanship and execution challenge rather than just purely like performing under pressure. Because I think, yeah, like I said, it just went too far in that direction. I like the idea. I think they should be very high pressure stages and relatively unforgiving, but they were a little too much in that direction. So, okay, so that's one way to fix it, right? Stage design adjustments. Another way to fix it is probably the easiest way right now because of how practice score is set up to run these is change the maximum or give the match director the ability to set stage points for each stage. So a very simple way to do this that would be easy for everyone to understand and adapt is how many guns are used on the stage, assign 50 points per gun. So on our three gun stages in the meat of the match, those get a little increased values. It's always longer if you have three guns relative to how the course is designed. So 150 points for three gun stages, 100 points for two gun stages, and then 50 points for one gun stages. And you might say like, oh, the rifle only stage that had the long range on it, you know, would have been undervalued. Just throw some handgun targets in there, like throw a transition at the end and shoot some handgun paper. Like you can make it however you want. And that would have still had 300 points, right? The both two gun rifle pistol stages on day three would have been 100 each. The 50 point shotgun stages would have been, or the shotgun stages only would have been 50 points each. So you have 300 points to swing around versus a little bit more from the eight because you had a lot of three gun stages there, so they would have got increased value. So instead of swinging like from an 800 point match shot and then 400 points, like 50% of your match is shot on these super fast, high pressure stages. It could have been something like 70% of the match was already shot. Now you have 30 points to swing around in if you make big mistakes. So that would have been one way to really easily balance it. And in the same vein, you can give even more flexibility and allow match directors to set per stage what they think the value should be. Now it could be risky because you could have people doing dumb values like, hey, this stage is only worth 10. This is worth 500. Right, like that's kind of on the community to self-police and say like, hey, this is a dumb idea. I don't want to shoot like that.
Yeah, it's tough when you have to assume good actors in all things, right?
Right. So like, obviously AMAX is a great match director, has a great vision. Like I wouldn't have any problem with him doing that. But if you just open it up like that on a club level or something, maybe you'd have issues. Although in general, I trust people to like, even if you make a mistake, like learn from it and say like, hey, like I like having the flexibility. I'm going to actually use that and do my best to make this a fair and balanced match. And then the other way to do it, which is a little more complicated, because, oh, by the way, in practice score, even in USPSA time plus points, multi-gun match type, when you go to build your stages, they default to 100, but you can set that field to whatever you want. So the feature's already in there. All you need is a rule book adjustment that says, hey, one gun is 50, two guns 100, three guns 150. Or yeah,
I think it's match probably, director sets in. I think it's probably good timing as well for a rule change if that is the route that the community wants to go. At the USPSA meeting that they had on, what was that, Saturday night, they said several times that they're open to comments on the rules, that they're all pistol guys. You know, it was Jake Martins and Troy McManus, and I forgot the interim president's name, who's a nice guy. Yeah, there you go. But they all said the exact same thing, is like, hey, we're pistol guys. So if you have comments on the multi-gun side of it, we're open to those comments. So if anyone's listening and they do have, you know, an idea, now's a good time, because I think USPSA is open to it. You just look at, like, well, you know, we're going to talk about this in a minute here, but modified division, you know, it's something mm-hmm. that the community wanted and people put it forward, and it's now a provisional division. So I think from my perspective, like the multi-gun rules were just set and then have not been revisited in a very long time due to lack of interest on both multi-gunners and from USPSA.
Right. Yeah, and they're definitely open to change. Like, the rule book was adjusted weeks before the event, like, especially add modified provisional revision, like, make everything clear with that. So, like, taking a look at the rules, penalties, how they're assessed, like, we have a chance now, especially since this match just happened and it's likely going to happen again next year at the same, which I think is great. Like, stop changing it. Just, like, let, like, AMAX and the team that he selected, which, by the way, was, like, pulled from a lot of multi-gun community people who certified in order to become USPSA ROs leading up to this event, rather than bringing in a lot of USPSA guys that didn't have experience in this. And the staff team, like, I know, and he talked about it at the match, that he denied a lot of requests to help staff because he only wanted to work with people that he trusted and knew. So, in my opinion, that was a great move on his part. And the match was very well run. Like, you had ROs that know what to do, handling long guns, how to, you know, corral competitors, make everyone happy and make the match run smoothly. So, while we have a lot of successes at this first one, and now we have an opportunity to really, like, focus in on a few key changes that we think would improve the format for next year. And this rules scoring is a big one for me that I think as a community should get talked about. And we just, like, here's a few really easy solutions. Let's just pick one of them and then run with it next year. And you'll have a massive improvement with basically no effort.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that idea. Do you have, like, your finger on the pulse? Is there like a movement to change the rules, or is that what you're hoping to do today, is to get to light a fire under people?
There's definitely a lot of a lot of people mentioning about how swingy day three was.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, like, but I hate just, like, talking about that without saying, like, you know, did you like the idea, or is that bad idea? Should we just have 12 or 10 meaty stages that are all relatively the same, and we don't have that day three pressure day, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the AMAX is the MD. Like, that's his vision. He wanted to execute that, and he did a pretty good job based on what he wanted to have happen. Like, he's happy with that, but does also think that it could be done a lot better. So, mm-hmm. I'm just hoping to give people, like, direction, say, like, hey, here's a solution for it. Like, now you guys maybe come up with a better solution. Maybe you want to just, like, pick, you know, one of these options that are relatively easy to implement, and just, like, just keep talking about it and suggesting it. And obviously USPSA is very open to changing the rule book to better suit multi-gunners. So yeah, we have an opportunity now to do it. So let's just, like, pick a direction and push that way.
There you go. All right. Well, yeah. If you have ideas or comments, now's the time to send them. And what was the email address that they gave? Wasn't it just board@uspsa.org? I think that hits, like, everybody plus Troy McManus and Jake Martins. So if you want everybody to know what you think about the rules, send that email on to them. So, Max, do you have any more thoughts on that, or do you want to move on to talk about staff and the culture at the match? Because I've got a lot of thoughts on that one as well.
I guess I'll just mention a couple things with the scoring. So, like, one other way to do it would be to get a rough minimum round count. Like, obviously, there's some options, but just minimum round count multiplied by 5 and have that set as the stage point value. And then another one is penalty values. I want to hear what you think about this, especially, like, I know USSL has reduced penalty values, like 2, 4, 6, 8, like 2 second FTNs, 4 second no shoots, that kind of thing. Or FTs, I forget which exactly is which, but, do you think that that's worth looking at as far as, like 5 second FTN, 10 second miss, like complete miss, or a 15 second FTE? Because basically hit factor is, like, self-correcting as far as these go,
yeah,
because it's points which are divided by your stage time at the end. So, like, in multi-gun, nothing's divided by the stage time. It doesn't matter. So, like,
right,
it's 5 seconds, 5 seconds, you know.
Yeah, it's time plus. Yeah. I've always said, like, you know, three gun is great for people that are bad at math because your penalties are just added on the end. And you don't have to figure out, like, hit factor or anything, especially, like, when you're walking through of figuring out, like, what the value is and how fast it should be. Whereas, like, three gunners, we just go and shoot the stage and then, like, where it ends up. So those penalties have been around for a long time in a ton of different matches. And I'm not opposed to changing them, but I feel like there would be some resistance to it, as there is to all changes. But 10 seconds on a clay is freaking rough. But shouldn't it be rough? Like, shouldn't it be like a very valuable target? Or is it the same as whiffing a you know, 9mm round on a paper target? That's what I don't know. Cause like, I feel like, yeah, that is a high value target, the clay, and yeah, the penalty is stiff, but I don't know, philosophically, I don't have like a good stance on should that be that way. I do know that when I've shot USSL matches where they have like the 2.5 second penalties and all the adders and shit like that, the way they had it in practice score was very difficult for staff to figure out. And so I always wondered if I was getting scored correctly, but that's beside the point. That's a different problem. But it also makes you shoot like fast and messy, to where I felt like at multi-gun nationals, if you did shoot fast and messy, or if you did catch a penalty, it really screwed you up. So it behooved you to not do that. And so I look at it as like a different type of game. Whereas just like shooting PCSL, where it's hit factor scored, would be a completely different game than multi-gun nationals. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that one. I'm not sure. I could be convinced of either one, but I'm not opposed to a rule change on target penalties.
I tend to agree. Like the, it's basically built into three gun. Like I'm someone who shot quite a few three gun majors, like earlier on in my shooting career. My first major match traveling out of state, actually, or traveling at all to it, was hard as hell.
Nice.
So that was extremely hard to come in as a newer three gun shooter. But yeah, like that's always been how I viewed it. And like, I think when it only presents itself as a problem when you have low stage times and one FTN, you know, counts for more. So like if we just make one incremental step and set stage point values more intelligently, I think that removes a lot of the pain from these extremely high second penalties. Cause they should be really, like a flying clay it basically is a high value target. You don't really have to have enhanced value. I know AMAX talked about making them even more enhanced than 10, like than a standard. And then, they ended up reducing them back to the standard miss penalty. But like when you look at each target individually, it's not that difficult in itself, right? Like obviously if your gun jams, that sucks, but it's really the pressure of competing on the stage in the match that makes you lapse on some of your fundamental skills.
Yeah,
but if you were just going to throw a toaster up in there, you'd hit the clay every time if you had no pressure on. So I think it's good. Stage values is where I'd look.
I think you make a good point about like you don't need to mess with both. Like if you're messing with stage values, you don't need to necessarily change the penalties, but yeah, I could see that as being like a way to fix it. But you know, the like 10 seconds on that clay, that sucks, right? But it also is one of those weird psychological or sociological experiments where you know, missing a like complete missing a paper target with your rifle is also 10 seconds. But how many people were complaining about a 10 second miss on paper the entire match? Like the only thing you heard about was the clays and what there were, I guess like from turrets, from like actual electronic things, there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Am I right on that? So there's 5 in the entire match.
Are you including the rabbits?
Yeah. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think, electronically thrown clays. I believe there was 5. Now there were a couple toasters as well.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But but people fixated on those. It's almost like that thing of like when you tell a kid, like, don't spill your milk, and they spill their milk. Like, you told them not to spill their milk, you know, they're focusing on not doing something, but you put that thought in their head of like, don't do it, implying that they're going to do it. So I think I'm not sure what the right answer is, but I think a lot of the clay talk was negative self-talk and people psyching them out or psyching themselves out for being nervous about a clay, which they don't normally shoot.
And it might be also that like you have the perceived ability to make up mistakes if it's a paper target. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, it was still there. I could have engaged it, but you know, the flying clay disappears. So it's like psychologically more harsh, but like how many people, you know, are getting misses on like complete misses on paper. Maybe they just pulled both shots left or something on those longer pistol shots. And then like, you didn't even know you missed it. So like, how is it any different, right? You wouldn't have tried to re-engage it if you had the opportunity. Cause you thought, you
yeah, didn't. Exactly. So, yeah. It's, and it, like, oh, sorry. I was just going to joke. Like, I've never seen so many boxes of shells thrown at five clay targets in my life. Like,
yeah.
Three gunners, they get out there and like they miss and they just keep shooting boom, 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 boom. You have like this trail of destruction following that rabbit. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. When you don't like get ahead of it. That was the stage that I rode.
Yep.
The rabbit stage that got thrown across.
So, yeah, you should next time if you get on the rabbit stage, somebody count mics and we'll see how many cases of shotgun shells the entire match threw at it. Yeah, good times. Yeah. Well, what other ideas do you have?
I think that's what I got for basically scoring and format. Like, I don't want to make it too complicated, but like the number one thing I would say is allow stage points to be set differently, however you guys want to do it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about staff and culture. So as you mentioned, you know, there is a very strong practical shooting culture in like the Minneapolis area, and there's tons of USPSA matches. There's now a PCSL match. There's multi-gun in various degrees, but they have a lot of multi-gunners and active people, and they have like this culture of. People are coming to our town and we're going to host a match. And there's like a sense of, what am I trying to say? Like volunteerism that is pretty strong in the Minnesota, competitive shooting scene from what I've seen. So, as someone who is trying to change the culture of USPSA Multigun Nationals, Adam has said on this show and several other podcasts that he's been on, that was one of his main goals, was to get multi-gunners and three-gunners who are familiar with three-gun procedures and rules and stuff like that to be the staff rather than bringing in pistol folks who may not necessarily be familiar with what's going on.
Right.
What do you think on that? Do you think that was achieved there?
Yeah, definitely. So the thing that one gun or pistol shooters don't understand about three gun is how like difficult it is to manage all your equipment throughout the day. Like you don't bring a duffel bag to a safe table and that's all you do until the end of the day, right? There's a lot, there's choke changing, there's shotgun preloading, there's candy caning, there's like slug and buck, and there's two different types of rifle ammo a lot of the time. There could even be different types of pistol ammo if you like got a hot load for spinners, whatever.
Yeah. Turning different dots on and off and yeah, all kinds of stuff.
You got carts, you got like long guns where as much as we try, you know, there's not always enough space for everyone to get set up at the like prescribed staging area or safety area. So like having a much stricter set of rules on like equipment handling just doesn't work the way that it does in a pistol match. So I spoke to Adam about this yesterday, and like as much as we hate like real safety negligence, it's very hard to administer rules in a fair way because like basically the way the rule book's written now, you know, the rule book itself and the list of procedures are roughly like they're very strict. They're on the stricter side. So like the fault lines of safe tables where you can't handle ammo inside of it. You know, at this match, Daniel Horner had a mag on the safe table and like was asked to remove it. You know, like, and it wasn't just him. Like, a lot of people make these little mistakes that don't matter at all in terms of real safety. And at this match, I think there was a great culture as far as like not going after, not gotcha, you know, anyone for DQs, like that kind of thing. At this match, we were supposed to have chamber flags or locked open actions on long guns carried muzzle vertical to and from the stages. Plenty of people brought open or brought their gun up with actions closed, right? Like, we didn't DQ for that. A lot of a lot of these like procedural requirements were not followed. And what I saw was that, like, the staff patting themselves on the back for having like basically the way that they worded it was any DQ that happens on the clock is on the shooter, and any DQ that happens off the clock is on us for not, you know, providing enough guidance and structure or, you know, areas like they had gated staging areas for shotgun and handling the equipment that you need to here, which I thought was good, but it wasn't enough, especially on our stage. Like, most of the stages didn't even have tables on. It was just like some event ticketing, you know, queuing gate, like this metal gate that was like separating areas. So, and everyone was patting himself on the back for being like, you know, we did our job. We didn't have, and I want to say any DQs off the clock. And it was like, that's just because you didn't prescribe or you didn't follow the prescribed procedures. Like, you didn't penalize anyone for the things that you said that they had to follow. Which, is that the right thing to do? In my opinion, it was. Like, I don't think that people should be DQ'd for any of this, like, ridiculous, not real safety, you know, just failing to follow procedures when it's difficult to know what to do. When I roll up, the entire gated area is full of bags, and I put my cart here, and then, like, play with my gun on the other side of a gate, or like 1 foot's in, 1 foot's out of a stage of a safe table, and I holster my handgun. Like, are you kidding me?
Or you have like shotgun shells on your belt and you're handling your right. pistol in the safe area. It's like, well, technically that's not kosher, but we all know that that's okay.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of things that you can do. I talked to Adam, like, we came up with two solutions that makes sense, really, which is, and they probably both have to happen at the same time, which one of them is really looking at the wording of the rule book and rewriting some of these stricter paragraphs and phrases in the scope or through the lens of multi-gunners, understanding like how much equipment there is to police and manage and what needs to be able to be done in order to give the competitor the room that they need to prepare. So that's one way that might get relatively messy, because it's really hard to write, like, you know, you have liability and everything, like, what, you're just going to allow people to flag each other? No, obviously not. But like, was there some of that went on? Yeah. And when a gun is chamber flagged and someone is like obviously trying to do the right thing, but maybe they didn't move their cart, you know, 4 yards to the berm, like, in my opinion, some kind of warning system. This is something I'm struggling with in PCSL also. Like, I hate just giving up and saying, like, you know, it's three gun. Like, it happens all the time. You know, you can't prevent everyone from flagging each other, which is obviously true. But,
well,
I don't know.
I think that's a defeatist sort of thing of like, oh, yeah, you can't prevent people from pointing their guns at each other. Well, like, we should try. It doesn't mean we shouldn't try. You know, it's like, we should ostracize those who do point guns at us and perhaps ask them not to come back. Like, I firmly believe that.
Yeah. That and there's, said, there's like, a huge difference between the guy who's like doing that accidentally because there's, you know, no room and isn't sure muzzle yeah. up or muzzle down. Like, can I set my gun down here? You know, I'm waiting for the stage to be reset. My guns are getting heavy. Versus a guy who just doesn't really care about doing it.
Yeah.
It's flagged. Who cares? Like, I can point my gun at you. Yeah. You know, like, and, that kind of attitude.
And it's flagged. Who cares? That's one of the reasons one of the many reasons I don't like chamber flags. You know, Another reason, like, you can't preload your shotgun when it's chamber flagged. It's just not possible. It's not physically fucking possible. So that seems like a silly thing to put in the rules. And that to me is, you know, it's like the PCC thing of the unload show clear. It's like, okay, well, now you got to like eject your round out. Cool. Now drop the bolt. Oh, cool. Now turn the safety off and pull the trigger. Okay. And then now pull the bolt back again and put in that chamber flag. It's like, okay, well, why did we do the clear the thing if we're going to put the thing in? And, you know, it, to me, those are rules are written by pistol shooters who are afraid of long guns and don't want to bother to learn.
Right.
And last year at the Jeff Kirkwell Memorial match, Jake Martins was there to, you know, see what the culture was like at the shooting range, and then talk to some people about possibly putting on nationals, which happened. And he shot the match. And one of the things that he said before, you know, when I saw him was, we'll see how many guns I get pointed at me this weekend. And he said it in kind of like a joshing tone, but it's like, there's still that hint of, you know, pistol shooter. Like that's just what three gunners do, right? They point guns at each other and, you know, I don't know what other slurs there are, but they point guns at each other. That's not a thing. It's not okay to point guns at each other. There's no other match you can go to in a country except maybe the old Rocky Mountain. I have no idea. They did some weird shit. And possibly Blue Ridge. They also did some weird shit. There's no other match you can go to in the country where it would be okay to point a gun at someone. Like that's not the culture. So if you primarily shoot pistol matches and you think that's culture from multi-gun, that's not the culture. It's not okay to point guns at each other. And if it happens, something needs to be done. But I hear that's the primary thing I hear from every other person every other USPSA pistol shooter specialty person, right? Is, yeah, you guys are unsafe. You point guns at each other. No, we don't. That's not okay. The people that I run with, and the people that I shoot with, and the people that are on this podcast here as guests, nobody likes guns getting pointed at them. Nobody puts up with that. So I don't know where that came from. Maybe it was, you know, something that was okay in the past in, you know, Soldier of Fortune, that type of thing. Or maybe that's where the whole USPSA pistol versus three gunners thing came from. I have no idea. But it's like, it's 2023, man. We got to get over that. It's not a thing.
I didn't really see blatant examples of it like that. Like,
yeah,
just the guy who's, you know, arrogant about it and just doesn't care. You don't really see that very often. What you see is more like people trying to follow the rules and just, you know, like an example is, okay, we have a dump barrel. Your gun goes muzzle down in it. I was an RO clearing the guns on the stage with the rooftop. So I had two long guns to clear right by the rooftop, and then you shot pistol downrange. Right after, so I'm clearing them into the ground in the dump barrel as people are resetting. And then sometimes I would take them and hold the muzzle down, like by the stocks, bring them over to the staging area for people to collect later. Sometimes the competitor would get back and they would take them. I would just say, yeah, just hold my stock, muzzle down, take them over there. Cause we have like people downrange resetting. There was no berm, no obvious place to go muzzle up. Right. But it, like, someone is just going to come up and say, oh, I thought you wanted to muzzle up. So like they pick their gun up and flip it around, technically maybe flagging someone downrange, but they look, you know, they're like 30 yards downrange resetting a popper, and they do it, you know, 10 degrees offset, but and it's like not flagging. Like I saw that you were safe and you didn't point at anyone. Like you were in the trees, not at that guy. But like that's one of those areas where like, hey, we probably should look at this and make a procedure that doesn't just look past this happening all the time, because that's just like people are going to get complacent, and on a stage where there are people all around you, it's going to start happening all the time. And
that's a good point. Yeah, that's a good point.
So the dump barrels, I have a way easier time with them at two gun matches because it's usually only one of them, and I can put it in a place that's like, and I will change stage designs to do this, like put it against the side of a course, against the berm. So that there's really none of that that can happen. Like, there's no reason for anyone to be in front of it. But that obviously isn't going to happen all the time. So one thing that I've been playing around with just as an idea in my head is like a yellow card, red card system, or some kind of warning system that is like, it's like, hey, you're a step closer to a DQ. And I'm not saying this would be for the example I just gave, but just in general, like it could be, you know, reports of like some unsportsmanlike conduct. It could be like suspected cheating that's not like that obvious. Like, I don't know, maybe something like, you know, hey, like, why did you remove your ear pro there? Like, act like you got bumped and then it came off and like you're trying to get a reshoot, or like moving toward an RO very quickly to try and get interference, where it's like, it's unclear what really happened. Those are just some examples of it, but I'd like to flesh that out more. And I'm probably going to give that a try at some point within PCSL. I think maybe that's something to look at, like some kind of safety warning system, where it's like, hey, I see what you were doing there. This is the correct procedure. We just need you to like, go into the berm and do this instead of what you just did. And like nothing's going to happen now, but like watch out for that for next time.
That seems very reasonable. I'm trying to figure out like if there's a problem with that, but it seems reasonable. It seems like it's good for both the match and the competitor, right? You correct the activity by giving a warning. And are you thinking like it's cumulative, like three strikes you're out kind of thing, or like next time we see it, you're done? Or
yeah, it could be like two for the same thing in a row is like, yeah, is a DQ where like originally one would be a match DQ.
Yeah.
But now we're like, you get a chance. Like there's a lot. I like being able to like use discretion as an MD instead of follow a strict rule book. Like when there's obviously some gray area here and you know, if I see someone's not obviously trying to be negligent,
mm-hmm.
and just made a mistake with what they were doing.
Yeah, because intent does matter, right? As much as
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like everybody at the end of the day, maybe it's not everybody. Maybe it's 51% of the people, but most people want to do the right thing, and you just got to give them the opportunity to do that right thing. And I think that's one of the things that this year's Multigun Nationals did pretty well, in spite of the improvements that you suggest there. As a competitor, I liked the roped, or I guess gated off areas. So I knew where I could go.
Yeah.
I knew I could just place my bag into a berm. I will admit that the very first stage, there wasn't like you said, a table or a place to put my guns. And I was kind of confused because I was like, okay, this seems like a trap. Like I'm definitely being set up here, but the RO staff, you know, told us like, no, just point your guns in the berms. It was like, okay, well, if I preload my shotgun, can I just put it back in the bag? And they're like, yeah, that's fine, as long as it's chambered or whatever, like you mentioned. And then that's what I did for the rest of the match. So I found the same thing at Two Gun Nationals last year, or was it Two Gun Nationals? I think that's what it was called, at Cameo. Okay. Yeah. Same thing. Like the first stage, I was really worried about where to put my PCC. Like I had heard all the horror stories from when USPSA was in Vegas and people getting DQ'd for looking at their dots and stuff. And what I found by actually going to the match was much different. It was much more relaxed, and they gave you opportunities to do the right thing, which I think is very important. Is, you know, if you don't want that behavior, you got to give people a really easy way to do the right behavior.
Yeah, I think they were close to doing it well at this match, but the lack of tables and places to operate, a lot of these gated areas were relatively small and just had the slant box for like a bunch of long guns in a row with no table to work with your stuff on. So like, if you wanted to, you know, unbag a handgun, holster it, like, or holster it, attach the holster with the handgun in it, like mess with your rifle if you needed to do any admin stuff on your rifle, like you're kind of left to go to a safety table where like one or two guys can use it at a time. I like, why are we still on this? It's like, the berms are there to be safe and stop bullets. Like berms are there as a backstop. Just put tables against the berm and you can put boundaries on it if you want, but say like, here, this is your staging area. You can do this, 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 and this here. And anything you need to do, you're just not loading your guns. Here's an exception over here. This is your shotgun preload table. They're going to stay over here. Or you just do it all in the same area. But like, especially in a multi-gun match, like having to, you can unbag your rifle here, but then you have to go 2 yards to your left to unbag your handgun. It's like, what the hell are we doing? Like, this is not that complicated. So like, if the number one thing I want to see like addressed in rules is the stage points being able to being set more intelligently, like number two is like fix this ridiculous long gun equipment procedure. Just give people a ton of space. The berm behind the shooting area is where you can work. Face into the berm and do whatever you need. Okay, you're not allowed to load guns there. Here's where you preload a shotgun. It can be separate and gated and denoted. And everywhere else, you know, we're going to put tables up against the berm, and then that's good. It's not any different or less safe than what happened at this match. Okay, like you had people doing that all the time outside of the gated areas because they were full. Like people card up to the berm right next to it. Yeah, I saw that.
Well, you saw many more squads than I did. I saw my own squad. Yeah. So, yeah, your experience obviously is different than mine, but I didn't see it on our squad, people doing that. But I mean, you're right as far as like you have to do your pistol over here. It's the one thing that has its own little table. But from a important is, you know, if you don't want that behavior, you got to give people a really easy way to do the right behavior.
Yeah, I think they were close to doing it well at this match, but the lack of tables and places to operate, a lot of these gated areas were relatively small and just had the slant box for like a bunch of long guns in a row with no table to work with your stuff on. So like, if you wanted to, you know, unbag a handgun, holster it, like, or holster it, attach the holster with the handgun in it, like mess with your rifle if you needed to do any admin stuff on your rifle, like you're kind of left to go to a safety table where like one or two guys can use it at a time. Why are we still on this? It's like the berms are there to be safe and stop bullets. Like berms are there as a backstop. Just put tables against the berm and you can put boundaries on it if you want, but say like, here, this is your staging area. You can do this, 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 and this here. And anything you need to do, you're just not loading your guns. Here's an exception over here. This is your shotgun preload table. They're going to stay over here. Or you just do it all in the same area. But like, especially in a multi-gun match, like having to, you can unbag your rifle here, but then you have to go 2 yards to your left to unbag your handgun.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are we doing? Like, this is not that complicated. So like, if the number one thing I want to see like addressed in rules is the stage points being able to being set more intelligently, like number two is like fix this ridiculous long gun equipment procedure. Just give people a ton of space. The berm behind the shooting area is where you can work. Face into the berm and do whatever you need. Okay, you're not allowed to load guns there. Here's where you preload a shotgun. It can be separate and gated and denoted. And everywhere else, you know, we're going to put tables up against the berm, and then that's good.
I'd be down for that.
It's not any different or less safe than what happened at this match.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like you had people doing that all the time outside of the gated areas because they were full. Like people card up to the berm right next to it. Yeah, I saw that.
Well, you saw many more squads than I did. I saw my own squad. Yeah. So, yeah, your experience obviously is different than mine, but I didn't see it on our squad, people doing that. But I mean, you're right as far as like, you have to do your pistol over here. It's the one thing that has its own little table, but from a, you know, three gunner perspective, like we're used to working off the ground out of our bags, yeah. You know, like to have a table where you can set stuff is a luxury that we normally don't have. So maybe it's a cultural thing, right? Cause the match is run by three gunners. And so maybe that's not something that they had, thought as a requirement is like big tables. So that's an easy improvement though.
I feel like if any match needs that, like multi-gun nationals should have it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
It's not that right, big of a cost.
No. So what other, I guess, staff and culture suggestions do you have?
So I think it's funny that guys within USPSA they almost like understand this implicitly, like how in three gun you have to be more lenient and can't, you know, be so strict on administering the safety rules. So like one example was on our stage on the rooftop and then pistol stage, shooter forgot his handgun. So like didn't even have the holster on. Obviously we shouldn't have started him as ROs, but hey, you know, everyone makes mistakes. We're all tired, like focusing on our own tasks. So basically like Brian with the timer is like super hard worker. I think it worked harder than me or Connor on the stage, but yeah, didn't notice. So like started the shooter. It was an unloaded start, so he didn't even need to load the handgun. We just didn't notice. And then on the clock, I won't mention names, but one of the shooters yells at this guy to go get your handgun after he realizes, okay, I've shot my rifle and shotgun, they're dumped. I got to shoot handgun now. They're yelling from the peanut gallery, like, go get it, go get it. So he runs back to the staging area, unzips his bag, pulls the handgun out of the holster, clips it on, goes back to the stage, loads it and shoots and finishes the stage. And Troy is standing right there behind the gate watching everything that happens. And then at the end of it, he goes like, I don't really know what to do. I didn't want to stop him.
Is that in the rule book?
I don't think it's in the rule book, but he's, I don't think so. Like I wasn't going to stop him because like, unless I saw something unsafe, right. In my opinion, that's something we could address at the end of it. Especially Troy standing right there. I'm like, oh, this is going to be interesting. Right. So, yeah, no shit. So he does that, shoots the rest of the stage. And then Troy's just like, well, it did say, you know, unloaded start, and it was unloaded, just not on him, like over in the staging area. So basically nothing happened. He just had an extreme time penalty from forgetting it.
That's crazy. So you can't stage any piece of gear, but you can go and retrieve your pistol from your bag.
You know, like that's one of the things. It's like, it's not a big deal competitively to anyone, but like, hey, if someone else had that happen and didn't know and they just stopped themselves, I thought the person yelling at him to go get the handgun was going to cause the shooter a much bigger problem by doing that.
Yeah, that's like, what I was thinking.
He had no idea what to do. Yeah.
So the person yelling, did that person get a? Is there some sort of interference or something? There's some sort of penalty for that, right? Talking to people whether
coaching, shooting? Yeah,
coaching.
Yeah,
is there a coaching?
No, nothing
penalty?
Happened.
No.
Oh, all right. Nothing, yeah. So that's. I mean. In the grand scheme of things, like three gun is a lot different than one gun.
Yeah.
Like this kind of thing is like, it may have been fun to watch, but like, it's not that big a deal in reality. Nothing was unsafe. Like we watched him do everything and that's how you would holster handgun anyway.
As long as everything's not as long as it's not unsafe, like I totally get that. But there are matches in the United States in three gun, that are outlaw matches where coaching is encouraged, and that whole go get your gun thing is just like a hearty har har, like look what you screwed up, so here's your dumbass penalty, right? So
right,
yeah, that's a tough one. That's definitely a cultural thing. You nailed that one.
So yeah, let's see. I guess you want to go into modified.
Yeah, man. Let's talk about modified. So
and other divisions.
Yeah. So this was the first multi-gun nationals where modified division was honored, recognized, whatever you want to say, and it's a provisional division. And this is something that I've been championing for a long time. I didn't write the rule set or anything like that, but I did propose a couple of years ago on the podcast that rules need to change for TAC ops. And, you know, everybody got their pitchforks out and their torches. And then as good libertarians, we decided like, well, let's just create a whole new division and then the market can decide. And I think it's pretty close that the market has decided. Like modified was super popular. And one of the questions that I got was, how come I wasn't shooting modified after championing it for so long? But the last
minute, not? I didn't even notice that.
I know, right? At the last minute, I decided to read the rule book. And number 12 here. So on equipment requirements, so optical sights. So on modified division, it says For pistol, it says yes, required, must be attached directly to slide between rear of slide and ejection port, and may not be mounted to the frame in any way. So I have an STI DVC 3 gun that I shoot in 3 gun matches. It does not have a dot on it. And so at the last minute, I had to switch to tack because a dot is actually required and modified, which I thought was kind of interesting. And Max, you can tell me your thoughts on this, because typically we look at equipment things as like the max, right? And like, for example, tac ops, you're allowed one optic on your rifle that can be magnified. You're not in limited, but if you shot your limited optic in tac ops, they would allow you to shoot that division. It's just you're taking the hit of not actually having magnification. So that I thought was kind of interesting to me. But then, you know, I see that same rule written that same way for carry optics and limited optics. So maybe it's just a USPSA standard thing. What do you think on that?
It's an archaic rule back from when people were complaining that like production shooters are just going to shoot carry optics with their normal guns and beat everybody. Like, and so they, in order to address that, they required a dot in carry optics, which isn't necessarily a bad thing in one gun, right? Like you're shooting one gun, you either have a dot or you don't. But in this, like, I think this was handled really poorly. I know the Mueller's got bumped to open because of it. So they didn't.
That's a weird thing, is like other people. The penalty is always getting bumped to open. And
yeah,
I find that as a weird penalty also. So what, the Mueller's were shooting modified and they didn't have
modified with tack handguns.
Yeah.
Right.
Michael Lindsay got the same thing happen to him.
Yeah, there were
it is weird that you get bumped to open. Like, why not just go put you I don't know.
Like, as Rangemaster MD, like, especially being a provisional division, I would, you know, it's like, hey, oh, this is an obvious oversight. We copy and paste it from carry optics. This, you know, like, if it takes going and talking to each individual who's shooting the iron sights, like, it's understood at this point that, you know, there's no implicit advantage to either irons or optics at these matches. It's like, it comes down to your fundamentals and what you train with. So, like, just address it now and say, hey, like, okay, we made this oversight saying it was required, but we're going to allow you to compete in the division. I think that was very dumb. But then also from your perspective, like, you didn't shoot it because of that rule, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I know
there's no good way to handle people it at that time.
I'm sorry. Say that again.
So, like, because you had competitors like yourself who specifically didn't shoot the division because they saw how it was written, then, like, there really was no good way to handle it at that time. That's probably the only way you could have handled it, is bump people to open. It's just, like, that just really irritates me how that was let through, you know, when you're, like, how do you just copy and paste something and not think about it when you're making a provisional division? Like, it's not that many things. It's a grid right there. Just, like, look at each thing. It's like, hey, is this what we want for the division? Yeah, okay.
Well, like,
check it off.
Yeah, so I agree on that one. And I do think it's kind of funny that nobody caught it after how many people have looked at it, you know, considering like how big the USPSA membership is, and all these people looked at it and no one saw that. I think that's kind of humorous, actually. I'm bummed I didn't get a shoot modified, but didn't ruin my day. I would have shot modified if I had been allowed to. And then I wonder if how many people like that are out there like me. And so would modified have been like the second biggest division instead of the third? So kind of wonder about that. But then,
yeah, it wasn't even close. They were 25% more participation than TAC, and only behind open had 70, modified had 49.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So how many people were in TAC? You said 39 in TAC. Oh, okay. So I had it backwards. So modified was the second largest division.
Yeah.
Okay, my bad. So anyway, the point is, like,
that's what you said. Yeah.
I don't know, man. the point is that I think requiring that is kind of silly. And then I think it's hilarious that it goes back to production and carry optics, and people bitching are like, oh, well, they're going to come in with their production guns and shoot our division. Like, who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? Let them come in.
Yeah, you know, you have a dot. Beat them.
Hilarious. Yeah. I'm sorry?
You have a dot. Just beat them. Like,
nah.
Your ego's on the line. Get over it.
Yeah, there's so much that we do in the shooting sports that are to protect a handful of people's egos. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
And this is another one, but I don't know. So the good news though, is it's provisional. So I can now provide that comment to board@uspsa.org and tell them I was dissatisfied. So
one thing also with modified is I know it was AMAX's intention that you were allowed a bipod on the stage. That was like the modifier basically, like for your rifle, that you get one of these, it has to stay attached to the rifle for the stage. But then the way the rule was written also carried over from open was bipods or similar meaning any supporting device.
So
basically in the middle of the match, we had some modified shooters using bags and got clarification on it. Clarification from AMAX came in, not allowed. And then, but Troy's the range master and, came in, his clarification was, yeah, it's allowed. It's copied from open. Like that was the intention with how we wrote the rule. So obviously there's some miscommunication leading up to it, within USPSA internally and AMAX and like the multi-gun rules committee and everything. Yeah,
and all other matches where modified is a thing, it's must stay. Yes, bipod must stay attached. It's not similar. So that is not even a way I would have read that rule. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because then that's another thing I can mention that needs to be changed, but I would never.
That's an easy fix. Like make it different from open for sure. Don't leave it as it is.
No. Speaking of open, so on the gear top, do you have any more modified thoughts, or can I move on to open real quick?
Shotgun was changed leading up to the match from maximum 12 held in the tube to 13 total in the gun.
Oh, that was changed?
Magazine tube length. Yeah. About a few weeks before the match, I believe. So that's one more thing. I think 13 total in the gun, like maybe a limit on magazine tube length makes sense, but like 13 plus one in the gun is a good definition. Or sorry, yeah. 12 plus one in the gun, 13 one. Total is a good definition. Cause then you get the guys who are like, hey, I can go slow. Can I have 12 plus one plus one? Like, I don't know, but should you allow, 16 round tubes and modified? It's not allowed in other, three gun matches that run it, right?
Yeah. You can actually have, I mean, there's no restriction on tube length. And like on.
Oh, I thought there was before this. Interesting. That's why IPSC has the like the extender ones.
So IPSC like, has
them in and they come out.
Correct. IPSC has a length restriction, and I think there's a box, or maybe the box went away. I'm not sure, but I'm not opposed to having like a length restriction or anything. The capacity makes sense, but my thought is it would be very convenient if it matched to IPSC divisions, simply for the fact that there's probably going to be a handful of people that are going to want to go to World Shoot and maybe use the stuff that they've been using all season. And then they find out that that's not within the IPSC rules, but it's in the USPSA rules. That seems like kind of silly, right? So it's like that production capacity thing that people are always talking about in USPSA pistol matches. It's 10 in USPSA and 15 internationally, right? Yeah. So that I see a benefit to getting on the same page on that. However, I haven't seen any attempt to.
Well, we have provisional division edits to make the next year. So
yeah, there you go.
No worries.
All right. So open. So last year, did you shoot multi-gun nationals last year?
No.
So I saw.
Wait, was there a multi-gun nationals? Yeah, it was Clinton House. Okay, 2 years
yep,
ago.
Clinton House. Yep. Yeah, 2 years ago was the one that they skipped. So, last year I saw a video of Scott Green shooting off of like three tripods, and I think it was Scott Green. Probably shouldn't throw anyone under the bus. So a person, but shooting off of three tripods, like there's three different offhand rifle positions, and they just stationed a tripod there. Well, it turns out
the whole squad did it, right? Like the whole squad 100%. Comes up. Here's our tripods. Like everyone uses it.
100%. Turns out the whole squad did it. So now it becomes like not only like you have to travel with a tripod to be competitive in this division, like you have to have, at least four friends that shoot open division as well, and also have a $1,300 tripod. So I thought that was kind of silly the way that rule was interpreted last year. Mm-hmm. And I think they went the complete opposite direction this year of where whatever you start with. And this was told for several people in open. I've heard it asked several times, but whatever you started with was what you had to end the stage with. So you couldn't like, you know, I always associate UMAX with the kneeling bipod and then, you know, shooting that from a kneeling position, ditching it, and then moving over to like a prone position where you forgot another bipod, you know,
right.
And it's like the Russian nesting bipods on your rifle. But, that was not okay in this match, even though last year was like tripod nationals, right? So it's like the two opposite ends. And again, I think there's some sort of minimum or middle ground that can happen here. You have any thoughts on that?
I like, you know, it's open, let open shooters run whatever they want, but you don't allow pre-staging. I think that's against the spirit of what a shooting challenge should be.
Like, I agree.
The stage was designed. Here's the stage. Bring your stuff and then execute it on the clock.
Boom. Same page. All right. We have a two-man consensus. So let it be done.
The double bipod thing, like, it's, you know, you drop a mag on the stage to reload.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to keep that on your person.
Yeah.
The two bipod things from IPSC, like before I did, I watched, you know, Timur Rintala do it in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
With the kneeling down to prone, and actually an IPSC rifle, they're trying to get rid of that. They're like forcing you to only have one bipod. So these guys are making like these two-legged bipods that basically rotate like this to like kneeling length, prone length.
They're trying
to make up new rules to get around that too. And they're like, what else you got? Well, like, we're gonna engineer around this.
Life finds a way, man. Life finds a way. Yeah. I mean, good for you for, you know, mentioning who you got it from, but you're just the first person I was aware of with that. So on the ditching mag things, you know, there was a question of that too. And, you know, really? Of course, well, so
they,
that
like
was,
they were thinking of, okay, interesting.
No, that's not where I was going with that. It was
okay.
an open shooter's smart ass response to you can't ditch stuff was, well, what about magazines? And so I was trying to convince, Forrest Lathrop, who's, you know, my buddy here in Cheyenne and rode out there with and stuff. I was trying to convince him that he had to retain all his mags in open. I was like, I can ditch anything, but since you brought it up, you got to retain all your mags. But he didn't think that was nearly as funny as I did, but it happens. Yeah. So I agree. Like on the not staging stuff, the staging of multiple tripods, I thought was kind of silly. It's like, you might as well just go make your own wall and then put it wherever you want it, you know?
Yeah, it's like, once you realize that, it's just like, no, I don't know how many shooters even expected that to be a thing. They just like had the tripods on them. And then once you realize that, you're like, well, shit, like we have to do it this way. It's just the only way we can. So like, by making the rule like that, like you really force people to be at a disadvantage or squad up with someone.
Yeah. Yeah, and on the other side of it, having to carry everything with you really removed the tripod option from the all-rifle stage.
Yeah.
And again, I recommend going and checking out the videos I made because you'll see all the stages. But the first position was from a zero-turn lawnmower, and a tripod would have been really advantageous on that stage for open shooters for sure.
Right.
Even if they had it deployed on the clock. Yeah, for sure.
Leaning back in little leg, like a leg bipod kind of.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And people got super clever on that. So I was excited to see that shooting challenge because it did require a lot of thought, and I got some help on it because my position looked like shit and someone was like, hey, you look like shit. You need some help here. And so that was cool. But that said, like everybody in open went with the big long bipod and then ended up taking it with them on the stage. So it wasn't too much trouble, but I still think like if you were allowed to ditch stuff, most people would have gone with a tripod on that stage and not even tried to figure out the bipod. So it is kind of interesting how, you know, when you have a certain set of tools, you can make it work. But if the other option was available, I don't think anyone would have went that way. Right. That's my thought.
So
what do you think?
Are you saying like with the tripod on that stage? Because like for me, if you're not allowed to pre-stage it, that means like you're holding it on your person. So you have to be like, you couldn't be on target set, right? You'd have to like be in the air, not touching the ground, and then set it down.
Like, yeah,
that's how I would interpret it. But
yeah, I agree. Like you'd have to be holding it. a lot of folks have like those carbon fiber tripods, which weigh almost nothing. It's way less than what a rifle weighs. So especially that one where you could start seated in the zero turn, I can imagine someone holding up a tripod and then getting into that position on the clock.
Right.
But yeah,
that wouldn't necessarily be bad. I mean, I think the advantage comes on being like pre-aimed, you know, and you had to have your muzzle down.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm careful on the pre-aimed because that was definitely a start pointing position, right?
As far as like...
There was an area that we had to aim the rifle at.
Yeah, so you had to angle down. Basically, yeah. I mean, what I did, a lot of people do is just like get your sight on target in your position and then point your muzzle down and on the buzzer and just drop the stock back in your shoulder.
Yep.
So in that case, like, I think it's roughly similar to holding a tripod, setting it down, and then getting on target.
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, yeah. So what do we have? What else do we have on gear and divisions?
Just, I guess, I'm super psyched for Modified. I think it's a huge success, even with the little hiccups on definitions. Like, I think it's going to be a really, really successful division that everyone in the three-gun world has been wanting for a while. Thoughts on shotguns and handguns really needed to happen, definitely.
Yeah, I think it's the future.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I really, really was irritated by the TAC limited disparity because, like, they're exactly the same division.
Yeah.
Just with the rifle optic being, it's like, that's so uninteresting. Of, like, the three main divisions you have, open TAC limited, like, it basically one is just like, hey, I have good eyes and I'm trophy chasing. Like, that to me, that just divisions are so important to the like the core of a shooting discipline, that if one of your three divisions is just like this placeholder thing, like, at least make it different. Like, yeah, I understand it's cool to shoot 1x optics, but make it 30 rounds rifle, make it, you know, more limited on the handgun, make it more limited on the shotgun somehow, like actually have a tube length restriction. And now you have the opportunity to do that, which I think is not a very high priority, because I think like TAC modified and open are a great solid like core of divisions.
Yeah.
But like I think you can get rid of one of those two and make each gun individually different in each of the three main divisions. It just brings more interest.
Yeah. So did you ever listen to the podcast that I did on my proposed division changes?
I did a while ago.
It was a couple years ago. I'm so spot on with exactly what you're saying. Like, I agree that, you know, limited and TAC are too close. I also thought, like, you know, we should remove the D60 availability from TAC and put it in open only. And then the 30 round magazines in limited, totally agree with. The shotgun limited to like 9 rounds total, totally agree with. I think that makes it a whole different game. Because one of the things that I've noticed from shooting modified division in like my local club matches, even with my iron sight pistol, when you load your shotgun up full, it's a completely different game. You're now concentrating more on shooting than you are like where you're loading. And you think like, well, that's just an extra quad that you have in there. It can't be that big of a deal. It's a big fucking deal. So doing it the opposite way where, you know, now limited has 8 rounds in the tube plus 1 in the chamber versus what we typically run in TAC or limited now, it was like a 12 round tube. So you can basically plus up off the buzzer. That would be a huge deal. That would be a huge deal. And, you know, other matches have, years ago, I was beating the drum on this and how they're too similar. And, other matches have made strides to separate them. Texas Three Gun is one good example. They have like a 32 round mag limit, 'cause one guy had Daniel Defense mags or something. And like, that makes sense. The one guy on earth. That makes sense. I think that's a good thing. And I can definitely see, you know, a situation where we would change limited division. It's like the thing I hear now, Max, and you probably hear a lot of this too, especially with PCSL, is that they say that limited division is the cheap division for people to start in. Like, how do you figure? Like, I've got my, you know, my $2,000 AR and my, you know, $400 optic, and then I've got my $3,000 to $5,000 pistol. Yeah, that's real cheap to get started in. It's like there's no other rules other than that one optic thing that you could even remotely argue that makes it less expensive. And that, so I don't buy that shit at all.
Yeah, that's not even an interesting point. It's like, if you're reiterating that, it just shows that you haven't thought about anything in much detail.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, a good example of that is like in the, that's not in the shooting sports, is like racing. Like the Spec Miata series is supposed to be, you know, it was supposed to be a budget series, and you know, you're all racing Miatas. Well, now, you know, now to stay within the rules, you're spending, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars on shit that doesn't matter, instead of like, you know, power adders and suspension that are outside of the rules. Now you're trying to spend thousands of dollars to stay in the rules. So like at the end of the day, it's a game, you know, and everybody's here to play. And a lot of people actually do like buying equipment. So I don't buy the fact that it's the lower cost. It's like production.
If you're starting,
like,
you can shoot any division.
100%. Yeah. If you're starting,
hey, I'm just getting into three gun. I'm not worried about finishing top five in my division. I can shoot open if I want to, like, let me just see how I do.
Yeah. I feel like people do expect to shoot top five though when they start, and that's the reason we don't see a lot of people coming back. So that's a whole other topic. We should talk about that sometime. But all right, man. So we talked format, staff and culture, gear and divisions.
World shoot qualification.
Yeah. I don't have any other gear thoughts. So let's talk about that world shoot qualification. So for a little bit of background for people that weren't there last minute, it was announced that the all rifle stage, which, you know, shot out to like 375 yards, I think, 370, the all rifle stage, if you wanted to, there was a separate match in practice score that you could go sign up for, and that would rank and stack you amongst all the other competitors, that, wanted to go to the IPSC rifle world shoot. So that's pretty much the synopsis there. It was executed, and people had some comments on that, things that I hadn't necessarily thought of, some good points. So what do you got on this one?
So first, a little background, I guess. Yeman was heavily involved in getting this going, like a real world shoot qualification process, was like gathering people, getting opinions and advisory board going, and so there's a reason everything's last minute. Is like they booted him mid-year, so he was
for background for people who may not be keeping up with everything. Yeman was the elected president that was ejected. What do you call it? Slain, stricken, removed, decrowned, dethroned.
Yeah, I mean it's a whole thing. There's you know, the reason that they gave for booting him was that his RO certification wasn't up to date, which was the case for another board member that didn't get the same disciplinary action. Mm. And it was obvious this was a job to remove him from office for one reason or another.
Got it.
So if you want to look at the drama, there's plenty of that out there.
Yeah. He's go to Brian Eno's forum, I'm guessing. But yeah.
Or Instagram channel, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. so that's the background. And to be honest, like I haven't really kept up much with that. I've my initial thought is like that's some bullshit, and then I haven't thought much more of it after that. But thank you for that background. Now moving on, since he was gone, the whole scheme kind of fell apart, right? There's no one at the helm of that one.
Yeah, back in January he was reaching out and getting opinions on like, hey, how can we run, you know, real Ipsic style qualifier and maybe attached to large USPSA matches, multi-gun nationals is the obvious one. So this seemed like a last minute, you know, kind of feeble attempt at doing that anyway, without having thought of it that much beforehand. So they're like, hey, we have a rifle only stage. We want to qualify people for a rifle match based on a rifle only stage. Why don't we just charge $15 for some reason? And it was given back, like half of it went to a prize pool for the people that finished on the side match, which was just your one run in the main match, so you didn't even get to shoot it again. And they gave out some cash money to the winners of this. But, there are a lot of criticisms of this and reasons why it probably won't actually be used as a qualifier. And it was just something they were trying to see what the interest would be my guess. And to get data just in case maybe they want to look at it later. But for one, the divisions in USPSA multigun don't align with IPSC rifle. IPSC rifle has standard and open. So standard is iron sights. So basically everyone's shooting open. So if you're shooting TAC, you're going to be graded against the guys shooting open with all the gear. So it doesn't really make sense. And no one's shooting iron sights in USPSA. So no one even brought standard equipment to shoot.
Except Joe Easter.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Kel-Tec, Joe Easter.
Yep. Right. One guy. One guy.
Yeah. So, but I don't know if he signed up and shot it. So
yeah, I'm not sure if he, I don't know either. I guess I haven't even like bothered to look for the results or anything, but I do know that there was one guy that was shooting, you know, straight up standard, legit standard.
So, so another complaint about it is it's not, not hit factor scored like IPSC. The target presentations, that's a big one, just hit factor scored. Like the stage itself, I think could have been an okay qualifier. Like if it was three long range positions that you had to build and get away from. And then it was some, you know, shooting on the move on some mini targets and then a few paper at the end. The stage was fine, but like obviously one stage is not that fair to qualify someone on versus, you know, an aggregate of multiple IPSC style stages. So
yeah.
Did you have anything to say about that one stage? Because I have some new information from Adam this morning about
qualifier not specifically on the qualifier portion of it. The one thing I would add is like you're absolutely right that it's, you know, it's a different flavor and a different style. They're definitely trying to backpack or piggyback on something that already existed, which was the stage itself. Like it had already been approved like months and months before. But I think like to go back to what you're saying earlier, having like all rifle matches would be the way to do it. Unfortunately, that just doesn't currently exist.
Yeah. So, well, how about all rifle side matches?
Yeah. I mean, that could be cool too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's going to happen pretty soon.
Oh, at JKM or what?
Yes.
Nice.
That's 2.5 weeks from now, I believe, from when we're recording this. So again, it's super last minute, but, the Rifle World Shoot is happening next year in July in Finland, and team selections have to be made by the end of March. So really everything's going to be last minute, like because of all this internal stuff with the USPSA, like they're not ahead of this issue. And if they want to do, you know, real qualifiers like this, it's got to happen at some point within the next like 6 months or so. Because we're already in August. So the idea from here on out, Adam is going to have, AMAX is going to have a three-stage IPSC style rifle side match at JKM. It'll be Sunday only, and it'll happen concurrently with the shoot-offs, I believe, is the way he explained it. And it's going to be one short course, one medium course, one long course in IPSC style. So like they're going to do a great job and actually look at how targets are presented, most likely use the white side of IPSC targets to mimic, you know, what you'd see on a real IPSC stage. And it'll be open. I think he said $50 registration is what they're going with. And I mean, it's an opportunity to even get like separate sponsors, separate prize pools, separate like mini awards, if anything. I don't know how deep they want to go on this because it's just like 2 weeks away and they just decided to do it. But this is something that aligns way more. Oh, and IPSC divisions, right? So they're just going to have standard and open.
Nice.
This aligns way more with what, you know, what this one stage for multigun should have been. So like, I won't be staying for this because I have to get back to Arizona anyway. I only planned on staying for these 4 weekends, which is kind of unfortunate. But yeah, because I would have liked to shot the qualifier. But from what it sounds like, this kind of side match format, or anyone who wants to run a USPSA style, like under the multi-gun rulebook, single gun hit factor rifle match, they're open to multiple clubs around the country stepping up to run something like this. And in my opinion, it makes a lot of sense to attach it to a major three-gun match like JKM, like they're doing for this.
That has like a lot of potential, you know, for the future, for that being a thing. I'd like to see like a whole standalone thing eventually, but you're right. Like there's no time to do it, you know?
Right.
I think like 2 months ago, I was talking to someone. They were like, well, we need to get a bunch of shotgun training matches for the people going to World Shoot. And I was like, well, I'm not going to World Shoot. So like, fuck them. Let them try, you know, train on their own. But if they want to have some sort of competition to decide who gets to go, that's interesting. I'm one of those people. I don't know where you said, but like I don't want, or I don't see a whole lot of benefit in like me supporting other people doing or going to World Shoot like financially. And like, if y'all want to get together and practice and stuff like that, I think you should definitely do it. But like, put some sort of other incentive for other people to go to the match other than like, oh, it's an IPSC World Shoot train up. Cause like, you're only going to get 20 people to go to that are actually training for IPSC World Shoot. Anyway, point is that was like a couple months ago. And my thing was like, oh, we shouldn't even be talking about shotgun. We should be talking about rifle or maybe even the next thing, because they've already, you know, picked all the shotgun shooters. They haven't picked all the rifle shooters. That is the one thing that we still have an opportunity to have some sort of like contest for. Like, that's what people should be focusing on. So it's good to see, even in a short amount of time, that they're able to pull something like that off for JKM. And it would be great to see that at other matches, especially considering how regional three gun is. And like, mm-hmm. a lot of people don't travel from, say, for example, Texas to Minnesota or California to Minnesota. So if there were those options around the country, I think that'd be a huge benefit.
Yeah. And for this quick one this year, within the next like 6 months or so, I think they're having a meeting this coming week about it. But, I think it's the World Shoot Planning Committee, mm-hmm. Within USPSA. But what AMAC said is like the general idea is to have maybe up to four, maybe more events that are very similar to this, like one short, one medium, one long, probably attached to bigger matches, IPSC style, sanctioned USPSA, and then basically aggregate score of those three stages within your division, you get points out of 100. Mm-hmm. And then your best two from any of the available qualifiers will qualify you.
Hell so, yeah.
I mean, for a last minute thing for a decision that has to be made, what is it, like seven and a half months from now? Like,
yeah. No, I think that's cool. I think it's good that they are doing something like that. Thinking about like the, you know, where matches are located and things of that nature, as you probably understand, and a lot of the listeners who have gone to major matches understand, a lot of times a match is taking up every single available shooting space on the range. Mm-hmm. So I'm not like, I'd have to sit down and think of like what matches could do that, could host that extra three stages. And then there's like, you know, the logistics problem of like, when are you going to do that during a major match? But I definitely think it's worth doing, you know. Like at Multigun Nationals, there was no additional space for three more rifle stages, right? Like every little nook and cranny was taken up on that range.
Yeah. So at JKM, the area that rifle stage, or the all rifle stage number one, was for Multigun Nationals. They're going to put all three of the side match stages there.
Oh, cool.
So I think it's just where stages one and two were. In that, mm-hmm. basically gate one.
Of yeah, the, and then there's also a range there, or not a range, a bay, I guess, that we didn't use that was mm-hmm. the zero bay, the 100-yard bay.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine that's like the medium course or something.
And then, cool. Yeah. Well, that's good to hear.
So, yeah, and it gets my brain spinning too. Like it, I think that'd be really cool to host one of those. Like, I wouldn't mind hosting a USPSA sanctioned rifle only multi-gun rule set match, like for people on the West Coast, like somewhere in the Phoenix area, maybe not even Rio, maybe one of the other up and coming ranges.
Yeah.
It could just be small. You know, if it's three stages, you don't even need that much of the range, and it's just a 1-day event. And if you tag it on to another big event, or even just schedule it around another big event, like the people who are going to travel to World Shoot, this is a point I brought up like to Eamon way back, is like, just do something attached to a big event, because the people that are going to have the resources and time off to like travel the World Shoot and represent the US there for like the trip could be like 2 weeks, right? Or it's got to be at least a week just for the match and then travel time. Like those people will make the effort to go to these side events and prepare for them. And it doesn't really matter if it's on like a Monday or Tuesday after the match, or like,
yeah,
AMAX is doing it, you know, on Sunday during the shoot off. So like the, yeah, it's a smaller subset of people. They'll do it for sure.
Yeah. I was just about to say, like, do it on a Monday or Tuesday after a match, because if you want to play at the top on the world stage, you're going to be the type of person that would, you know, get those extra 2 days off of work and go do that. Yeah. And honestly, like, you could run it like at a club match, like a super classifier or something, and, you know, have that open to people. So what you're saying of, you know, having one, and shit, I bet it would fill up in Arizona. There's so many shooters out there, and you guys have like a super healthy, like carbine culture as well. So,
yeah. I'm sure we could have like, I don't know who it would be personally, but I'm sure we have plenty of USPSA ROs that are certified in that area. We have our own range master local, I'm sure. And it could probably just be a 6-stage, like 3-2-1 format. What's nice about like rifle versus handgun is like you can make the long range courses, the short courses that just have a couple of positions, and that way like you can have a big bay, you know, that's your like, you know, a lot of paper, 32 round, whatever, long course. And it won't take up that much of the range, because if you have three short courses and like two or three of those are a couple long range positions each, you can be really efficient with how you pack everything in into the area, and then do a couple medium courses and then one long course. And it's almost less set up than a 6-stage USPSA pistol match. Like, yeah. Obviously you have to truck the targets out there, but you could do that, run it Saturday and Sunday over a weekend, and just let anyone come and qualify. So I think the more of those little matches we have, the better. And if there's motivation to run them, and you get some sponsors in, you know, make it affordable, make it fun, while still being IPSC style, like you get a lot of people to attend who are local, if you put them in the right areas, who may not even necessarily want to go to World Shoot, but just like, hey, this is a different match, I'm going to try it. And it could just be successful just on its own merit.
Yeah, if that was in a local area, I would definitely go shoot that, even not having the goal of going to World Shoot. Like that's like right up my alley. That's like fun stuff, you know, go shoot a carbine match for sure.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. We'll see how it plays out, and hopefully they'll do something similar for shotgun next time. And who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Now, does that give you any ideas for doing that with PCC as well, or just, you know, PCC already has Optics Nationals, so it doesn't need that, or what's the deal?
Yeah, it's a little easier for PCC since we have our own Nationals, but PCC is not offered in IPSC, in the US IPSC Nationals, still for some reason. So I like the talk for that was like PCC is a nightmare because it keeps getting postponed. I think it was supposed to happen in like 2020 or 2021
yeah.
in Florida. And then USPSA withdrew their bid, or the US withdrew their bid. I'm not exactly sure. Like maybe just the timing window passed on when Florida made sense. But also the SBR laws here are awful for all the Europeans who are trying to like fly in with their guns. So it would almost be like a US World Shoot with like some foreigners coming in.
Interesting.
So it went to the Czech Republic, and they kept like not having good dates for it. Like originally it was October of this year. Is that right? Yeah, it was October of this year. And then they moved European Handgun Championship. They rescheduled it to be like 2 weeks apart. So all the ROs that need to be at EHC were going to be like taken for that, not available And like hotels were already booked and it was like way too late to plan everything. So they postponed it again to May of next year, 2024. And then Finland, the Rifle World Shoot was like, that's too close to us too. So then they moved it again. So now it's 2025 May. So we don't even know what qualifiers are going to count, but I would assume the easiest way to do it, if they don't want to host extra matches, is use your best two out of your three last nationals performances.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, we'll see. No announcements on that yet. Obviously, the bigger fish to fry.
Well, it's cool that there are more opportunities within multi-gun that are not nationals in the USPSA realm. So more matches, the better. Hopefully people, fill them and shoot them. And it's a useful tool for selecting teams for the future. So that'd be good. All right, man. Well, so we covered everything that I had down to cover. Do you got anything else you'd like to talk about before we roll here?
No, I thought we covered pretty much most of it. So I think as far as discussions go, like, I think there are pretty clear solutions to most of the topics that we discussed. It's just about picking one and implementing it. But the one that I'd like to see more discussion on within the community is like how to direct the culture of like responsible safety and respect for fellow competitors, as far as the everything down to like, as a match director, how easy do I make it for competitors to safely police their equipment? Opening up the entire safe berm for working on guns is one thing, but like, are we going in a direction of like, should we open up the rule book phrasing wise to make more common sense safety rules there? Or do we just implicitly understand that USPSA multi-gun or multi-gun as a culture in general, that we, like these rules, like we just don't really, these are more like guidelines. We don't really follow them. Like we that can be dangerous too, because then, you can selectively apply rules in cases where you don't like the individual, or it's a gray area on how egregious it was, or was it intentional, or was it accidental? So they're not easy questions to answer. The warning system kind of thing is just an idea that I haven't fleshed out yet, but that I would like to explore more. So if, everyone has different experiences. So the more discussion, the better on that kind of thing. I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've brought up some really great topics for people to discuss. And if you want to discuss them, I highly recommend going to the YouTube version of this and leave a comment. It is a great way to open that discussion and get people to speak together. And it's hard to do that with a podcast. So go do it on YouTube and put all your comments there. And then if you're particularly passionate about something, just email, the board at USPSA.org and tell them what you think. So Max, this is a great topic, dude. I'm so glad that you brought it up, and thanks for putting all that together. And dude, it was great to see you at USPSA Multigun Nationals. I had a fantastic time and it was wonderful to see you there, and good luck, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. You too. And thanks for doing this show, obviously, time and time again, and being a source of entertainment for everyone. And thanks for having me on.
Right on, man. It's my pleasure. Prep and Press is proud to be a part of the Firearms Radio Network. If you like this type of content, help us grow the show and the shooting sports by sharing with a friend. Just open the podcast app you're using right now and hit that share button. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on the range.